WMBR in Cambridge. This is Entrepreneurs of the World Unite, a show about entrepreneurs and innovators at the front lines of the battle for climate change. On today's show, what inspires John Gerster, an investor and founder of multiple climate tech startups? Stay tuned. And welcome to another edition of Entrepreneurs of the World Unite. I'm Sarin Grama, your host for the next hour. We are broadcasting from the WMBR studios in the heart of MIT. Now, today I have with me, right here in front of me, my guest, John Gerster, an investor and founder of multiple climate tech startups. And I was explaining to John, since this is the beginning of a new edition of the show, I want to give John and everyone else an introduction of what this show is about. So, John, first of all, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. All right. By the way, thanks for the tour of the library.
That's awesome, isn't it? All right, so here's how we're going to do this. This is how I entice John to come here in the studio with me to talk about his background and his work on climate tech startups. So I promised John that we'll play his favorite songs on the radio. And as many of you know, WMBR has this amazing library of LPs and CDs. And sure enough, I showed John this, and I think he loved
it. It's pretty overwhelming.
So together we picked a few songs from your favorite bands, your favorite music. And we're going to play that as we have our conversation about climate tech and climate tech startups. So I figured that would be a great way to kind of pause the conversation a bit, listen, sort of reflect on what we're talking about. But also, you know, this is your show, this is your hour, and I'd love to hear your music and hear what inspires you, not just what your work, but also the music and why you chose it.
So. Yeah, and we generally chose older songs since that library is a step back and an unbelievable statement about groups that I had forgotten about.
John, you and I only met recently. I think when I look back, it was about 3-4 months ago, and we kind of met by accident. I remember I was sitting next to you. Somehow I sat next to you at Aeronaut Brewery at one of those events, the Greentown Labs events.
Yeah.
And so, pretty quickly I realized that you know a thing or two about HVAC, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. And so we sort of started talking more about that and came to understand that you've actually quite involved in that. You've spent quite a bit of time on buildings and ventilation and air conditioning, so very few people know this stuff as well as you do. So I was intrigued by that. We kept in touch, and here we are now talking about your background. I'd love to learn more about it. But before we get into the air conditioning stuff, give me a little your introduction, background, how you ended up in this space and where you came from.
You know, it wasn't there wasn't a design goal to end up in climate tech, and I'm very respectful of people who I meet who literally have been at whatever they've been doing that has an impact on the environment for their entire lives. I'm not that. I'm fortunate enough that the way it worked out in 2005, I was trying to study opportunities around early stage companies in both energy and health sciences. Because at the time we were living in Charlestown, we had 3 young kids, and I had been in enterprise software, which was at a tough moment in time. And so I just started to study those two broader sectors, and it just ended up working out that it allowed me to step into a situation that allows to start a company around the building energy efficiency space. But that's not because I knew the space or by itself. I ended up, as a lot of times, finding some really interesting people who had some insights. And so I consider a lot of this just, you know, sometimes you have good fortune.
Yeah. Was that with Digital Lumens first?
That was Groom Energy. So the way that worked was Dave Groom, who's part of Groom Construction, had met an entrepreneur named Bob Kirby. And Bob had moved to Boston, and Bob was a plant manager who had learned how to do his own projects to reduce energy consumption in buildings, typically industrial kind of systems. And he had moved to Boston, and Dave's idea really was, is there a way to add this to the construction world? And so I started working with Bob, literally just to try to think through what kind of services business we could build that would employ construction implementation, but start with energy math and quite frankly, just focus on commercial industrial type buildings and the users of those buildings. And so we did, you know, what you do when you're a startup, like there's no rules. You basically just try to brute force assess what customers might like. This was not a product company. Mm-hmm. I had been in venture capital before. This was literally just selling your brains to try to help people with, in this case, saving money by reducing their energy consumption. And I think looking back on it, I did not anticipate I would do it full time. I thought it'd be one of what would be a series of projects. And like a lot of things in startups, when you find a team you really enjoy and you learn and trust mm-hmm. and respect, and you find, by the way, most importantly, a market that's pretty compelling and interesting, you know, it can tend to end up consuming your day. And that's what ended up happening for the beginnings of what was Groom Energy.
Okay. How many years did you spend with that?
Well, we started in 2005, and we sold the business to EDF, the French utility, in 2016. Mm. And so it was a 10 or 11 year run building from, you know, two or three of us in a room to a couple hundred employees scattered around the country, all doing the commercial industrial approach to retrofitting buildings. And then Digital Lumens was along the way, the LED sector was starting to emerge. And so we were fortunate enough to be able to come up with an application for intelligent LED systems or lighting in industrial environments so that we could design something. Literally, like, you know, I looked up my first, how do you file a provisional patent? Mm-hmm. And I recruited some folks that knew the sector and knew the technology stack to be the first team members and got some venture capital for that. So while Groom Energy was a traditional services business that just did solutions for corporate customers, Digital Lumens was more of a traditional venture capital backed, build a product. It was hardware and manufactured here in the US, but also componentry from China. And so we had both of those going together at the same time in sort of the 2008, 2009 timeframe. Yeah. And both businesses eventually were acquired.
Do you remember working with Greentown Labs at that time?
Because yeah.
Digital Lumens featured big in the
yeah,
the
you know, because yeah, we first started, we called it Groom LED, and we were up in Swampscott and then Salem. And then once we got the capital, I think Brian Schemmel, one of the early founders, started to hang out at what was then the beginning of Greentown Labs. And so they became a bit of a sponsor. And there was a Duke entrepreneur named Jason Ethier who I was trying to coach on his startup. And so we were, those were the early days, right? I mean, it was basically a totally different world than it is today, but Digital Lumens was, you know, kind of the outpost.
Yeah, no, actually Jason, I just spoke with him last night.
Yeah.
he's in town, by the way. So
is he coming tonight?
Hopefully. Yeah, maybe he'll come tonight.
Okay, yeah.
So yeah, those are the early days. I remember that when Digital Lumens came and offered to install all these amazing lights in that initial warehouse space at Greentown Labs in South Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you were involved with that.
Yeah, I mean, basically, after we had started it, it was a tricky thing because Groom Energy was going to be a reseller of their product. So we were arm's length, effectively, because they would deal with our competitors. But I just stayed on the board after we had raised capital and tried to help as best I could with the perspective you can bring from being a service provider, in this case, a customer of the company.
Yeah. And then from there, you moved on to...
Yeah, well, we were acquired by the French utility, and as I like to joke, it was a learning journey to be part of a 160,000 person, $85 billion government-owned utility that was generally nuclear. So I didn't anticipate exactly what that journey would be, and I've told a bunch of folks that the French think of employment probably different. Normally, if you're an entrepreneur and you sell a company, you're expecting to stay around for some period of time. Yeah. And my experience is usually, you know, a year or two, because there's a transition that's going to happen as you're part of a bigger entity. And the French think of it a bit differently. So I ended up staying over 4 years. the 3.5 years was required, and then COVID hit, so I stayed a bit longer because we were going through a bit of turmoil ourselves. And so until once we had stabilized, I was able to transition out. So after that, which was the beginning of last year, was a new chapter I had to figure out how to write about what was I going to be when I grew up. So that was what then led to now I'm part of Activate Capital, which is a growth stage venture firm investing in climate tech. We're investing in energy, mobility, and industrial tech. And then we started another company last year with some former folks from Grim Energy.
Great. So let's hear that story after we take a musical break.
Yeah,
that way.
Great.
So, John, you chose a bunch of oldies. You know, we got like Rolling Stones. We got Blues Brothers
you
here.
You choose. They're all good.
So we're going to play a couple of songs and break up the conversation a bit. So we're listening to ABBA. All right, here it comes.
That's what you've done to. Nothing more to say. No more race to play. The winner takes it all. The loser standing small. Beside the victory. Shake my hand. I apologize if it makes you feel bad seeing me so tense. No self-confidence, but you see, the winner takes it all.
That was ABBA with The Winner Takes It All. Yeah, I'm here in the studio with John Gerster, a local Boston tech entrepreneur, investor. And just before the break, before the musical break, John, we were talking about COVID and how that kind of changed the direction of what you were doing. So we ended up, you know, Digital Lumens kind of led it, the groom energy, right? Tell me more how you felt about the COVID. Like what sort of sparked that idea of starting to into this HVAC thing?
So when COVID hit, you know, our business was building retrofits. And so everyone has a moment in time of what happened when COVID hit. And we had employees in 22 states. And, you know, we kind of watched by different regions of the country of who could move around. Mm-hmm. I remember we were racing to try to figure out how to get PPE for all of our team members, because in some geographies you could still move around, in other geographies you couldn't. So we were trying to manage implementations of projects. But you can probably guess, just like everyone else, the world stopped. So that was a difficult part for me, because I was already planning on transitioning from EDF to French Utility at some point, but that required another gear for all of us to get through doing projects while, you know, navigating this challenge about health and safety. At some point, I think, you know, we were construction, so we were doing safety visits, you know, we had PPE, and all of a sudden I remember reading in the paper, like, PPE was on the cover like the Boston Globe. I'm like, no one knew what that was. Now the whole world knows what it was. So that's what I would think about when I look back at the managing through that.
So that was not an actual new business opportunity, even though, because you knew that.
We were trying to get through as a service business, get through paying the bills by generating revenue and gross margin from doing projects, which is the way our business operated. Yeah. And in building energy efficiency, typically for the C&I buildings, there's two big loads, and you and I are going to talk about HVAC, but we already knew lighting and HVAC were the big loads. So we were doing control systems overlays to try to manage heating and cooling more effectively. And what was interesting is we were acquired by EDF, and they have a business line that acquired us called Dalkia, that's a buildings business, if you will, that includes things like district heating and cooling, as well as building retrofits. And they had acquired a business that was doing refrigeration services, natural refrigerant-based services for grocery stores in France. We did a lot of grocery store work here in the U.S., but it was through that group within Dalkia that we learned that, you know, obviously Europe's ahead relative to the transition to natural refrigerants. And, you know, we expected that the U.S. would catch up eventually. So as I was leaving, and one of my other partners had already left and was looking at his next chapters, we started to work on an idea that ended up becoming Therm, that was really cooling as a service, which was this, you know, trying to figure out how to have the world adopt systems that were less toxic to the environment in a way that could be financed and done as a service as opposed to a big capital expense. So that's the idea we started working on just as I left Dalkia at the beginning of 2021. Yeah.
And so this was a cooling as a service in a way that to incentivize people to switch to new types of refrigerants, you would offer a service?
This is what we thought we would do. You know, what I always try to focus on in my experience around anything in entrepreneurship is like voice of customer. So we do through voice of customer some of the challenges with any upgrading systems and the costs. And yet you saw a big opportunity for both energy savings as well as the toxicity of chemicals that this was a trend and a transition was going to happen. It's a function of what could you do to help catalyze it. But I'm going to reverse on you, because I stepped into HVAC through the learnings of building energy efficiency. But what was your journey of discovery, and how did, you know, HVAC is not, maybe today it's more known than it was, but how did you step into it?
Yeah, well, this is our common knowledge here. The area that we bonded with is this HVAC, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. I came to HVAC through refrigeration, which is a sort of related application, cooling. And I started a company called Promethean Power in 2007 that discovered a problem that wasn't addressed in the Indian marketplace, you know, of all places in India. So I spent the next 8 years working on figuring out a solution for this refrigeration problem. Basically, there's no refrigeration in India, in this particular sector, in the dairy sector, because there's no reliable power to run these refrigeration systems. We're talking about industrial refrigeration systems. So I spent a lot of time thinking about refrigeration, how to make it more efficient, how to make it work in challenging conditions, and understanding refrigerants and compressors and evaporators and condenser and all that stuff. And so when I came back from India in 2016, I was ready to take a break. I was looking at a few other opportunities, but somehow I ended up back in cooling and refrigeration, but this time in air conditioning, because this is another problem that is not being currently addressed, is the need, the demand for air conditioning is growing at a staggering pace, and the efficiency of air conditioners and refrigerators is relatively low compared with what's possible. I mean, it is sort of a really hard problem to do. Cooling is going against the second law of thermodynamics, right? You're reversing nature in some ways. You put a lot of power to do that, but you can move heat the other way, not the natural way. You can move it the way you want, but you have to put a lot of power into it. So that was always challenging to me, sort of intriguing problem.
Well,
it's
funny because there hasn't been a ton of innovation. So if you have a technical orientation, and I think we were before this, you said you have electrical engineering background.
Yeah.
I have a degree in electrical engineering. I never used it, really. I did it for summer jobs, and then I went to Wall Street. So I don't consider myself to be a technologist from an expertise standpoint. I think I'm technically aware, but it was really just through learning what you just said about like the energy load around refrigeration and cooling, and knowing this is not a small problem. And oh, by the way, it's getting bigger every day, that I think probably we both had signals around that. And if you're an entrepreneur, you're trying to figure out what are big problems you can solve, where you might have unique insight as to why you could solve them. You absolutely had that if you already had done Promethium before you came back.
Yeah, it's funny because being an electrical engineer, what I did, the way I took a stab at solving the problem was like, I look at thermoelectrics at first. I was super intrigued by those because as an electrical engineer, it's sort of, you put an electric current through this device and it creates a hot side and a cold side, and it was so elegant and simple, and it really made a lot of sense. It was mostly about power electronics, and yes, there was some heat transfer and all that stuff. It's also very important, but ultimately the control of it was all electronics, and I really understood that very well. Except thermoelectrics are not efficient enough for this kind of work, and when you look at the world, the way big refrigeration systems are done, it's still vapor compression is still the dominant technology. Yeah. And you need that. I mean, for the amount of cooling that we need, you need to use the best technology you can get. Except vapor compression it's got its own problems. And this is, in the end, I decided it probably worked better, using the existing technologies and improving on them on vapor compression with, looking at ways to understand it and make it better. So let the compressor be in the loop, let the refrigerant be, but you can change the refrigerant. And we talk about natural refrigerants. They are less harmful to the environment. You can change compressors. You can innovate in a lot of ways. That is plenty of room to do there in this field to make refrigeration and air conditioning better.
Yeah.
So on the refrigerant side, I mean, this is what Therm is doing. Tell me more about why refrigerant gases, why you focused on those.
Well, I think because of back to this question about, what insight do you have? We had a lot of voice of customer. And so we had seen the European grocery industry have to transition because of regulation to CO2 based systems. Mm-hmm. We also did a fair amount of work in cold storage. So with traditional ammonia type systems, mm-hmm. where we learned those load sizes were a different order of magnitude. So I think we ended up just talking to a bunch of the former customers we had to try to discover what they would consider relative to a transition path to systems that were both more energy efficient as well as didn't have the toxic chemicals, had natural refrigerants. And we settled on probably more Therm became a thread to talk about what would it take for you to do transition to what we've seen happen in Europe. Mm-hmm. So that was the idea originally, was cooling service. Then we discovered as we were doing homework around it and discovered that the carbon markets In Europe, they're compliance related, but we understood the voluntary markets here, and we found methodologies to basically account for these transitions that companies would make, and that there could be economic recovery for the capital investment. And so Therm evolved from what we thought would be a solutions provider for as a service to focusing on the carbon markets.
So replacing refrigerants and getting credits and selling those credits.
Yeah, so exactly. Doing the calculations to say you took out a toxic or a system with, a refrigerant that was toxic and you put in a natural, and there's a delta there that you just remove from the environment the toxic chemicals, and the carbon calculations through some of these methodologies allow you to then have an economic consequence in terms of value of the carbon credits. So that's what we started doing. That really was a facilitating way to say you're going to make these transitions. And plenty of companies in the U.S. are starting to. We're just probably 7 to 10 years behind Europe.
You know what's interesting in my experience, because I talk to a lot of people about refrigeration, and one of the first things they ask me is about these refrigerant gases, how harmful they are. And I tell them, and it's surprising to them, that that problem has been solved technically. Like, there are natural refrigerants that do not harm the environment. They exist, they're used, they're used a lot more in Europe, like you said. We just need to have the industry moving towards that, whether it's through regulation or through sort of cost or market-driven approaches to make that happen. But technically, that problem has been solved. And in fact, Transera, the company, the new company I'm working on, we're not innovating on the refrigerant gases. Those exist. Mm. We'll use the best refrigerant gas out there, the natural refrigerants. And now we need like innovators like you, entrepreneurs like you, to bring that technology that already exists, to bring it to market and make it widely available. So.
Yeah,
let's
pause
here for another song, and then we can continue on that. We are going to play the Blues Brothers now, and I think I'm going to get this right this time. And I forget which song we picked, but we'll. Oh, you picked the song.
I think we chose Soul Man, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. So what? Tell me about Blues Brothers.
Blues Brothers. Actually, first of all, love the movie, love the characters, and. I still get a kick because our kids, when they were young, would watch that movie, and there's a lot of song and dance in that. So,
all right, maybe we should get my son to watch it. It'd be fun. All right, here comes the Blues Brothers.
Thank you. That was Groovy by King Floyd. We changed it a little bit. This is a Willie Mabon song, also done by Cripple Clarence Lofton. Sick and tired by the way you do. Good time, Papa, gonna poison you. Sprinkle goop of dust all around your bed. Wake up one of these days, find your own self dead. She said, you shouldn't say that. I said, what did I say to make you mad this time, babe? She said, I don't know. My, oh my, oh my. She said, I don't know what my baby's putting down. A woman I love, she got dimple in her jaw. The clothes she wear made out of the best of cloth. She can take them and wash them, put them up beside the wall. She can throw them out the window, pick them up a little bit before they fall. Sometimes I think you got your habits on. She said, you shouldn't say that. I said, well, what did I say to piss you off this time, babe? She said, I don't know. My, oh my, oh my. My mama sat down and cried. So you're too young a man to have many women you got. I looked at my mother dear, didn't even crack a smile. Said a woman killed me, I don't mind dying. The woman I love, I want her weak before last. The woman I love, I got outclassed. Thought I wanted your baby a long time ago. You don't want you still, gonna have to let you go. She said you shouldn't say that. I said, well, baby, you know, when you bend over, I see every bit of Christmas. When you bend back, I'm looking right into the new year. She said, honey,
Honey, you know I gave up cigarettes for my New Year's resolution, but I didn't give up smoking. I said, woman! Woman, you gonna walk a mile for a camel? Or you gonna make like Mr. Chesterfield and satisfy you? But she said, that all depends on what you're packing. Regular or king size. And then she pulled out my Jim Beam, and to her surprise, it was every bit as hard as my Canadian club. I said, well, now what you got to say, babe? She said,
that was the Blues Brothers, but it was not Soul Man, as we had thought. But that's okay. We can play that next. John, I'm here in the studio with John Gerster, a local entrepreneur, investor in climate tech startups. So just before the break, we're talking about the need for natural refrigerants and how you discovered an opportunity here to bring natural refrigerants, such as propane,
CO2
is a great refrigerant. Bring those to market with these carbon credits, right? There's a carbon credit, yeah. And I was telling you that I think it's always surprising when I hear people think, when they ask me about refrigeration or air conditioning, the first thing they think about is refrigerants. Like how, you know, air conditioning is bad for the world because of those refrigerants. Yes, it is, but not just because of the refrigerants. It's more because of the power consumption of these air conditioners. Refrigerant problem technically has been solved, but it just needs a market, better solution to bring it to market. So you guys are working on that. I want to talk about the Activate Capital. So not only an entrepreneur, but also an investor too. How did you make that switch from asking for money to ended up giving money away?
Well, I've sat on both sides of the table. It's been fortunate that I probably have some perspective where I'm accommodating to both sides. I started, after Hewlett-Packard, I did an internet startup right around the corner here in an MIT spin-out called Open Market, and that led me to get into venture capital, early stage venture capital in the 90s, or software typically, commercial industrial software. And so I had been in venture capital, but it was so long ago that the venture capital world has professionalized a ton. Obviously, there's a lot more zeros about how much money has gone into alternative assets through venture capital and private equity. So when I was leaving, I was trying to figure out what I was going to be when I grew up. I said that earlier. I was laughing that, like, you know, I really didn't know. Therm was a fun experimentation around what turned out to be a company in an area that I knew. But it turns out I knew the folks at Activate already, and I started working with a few different firms to see if I could help on their portfolios. And so I did that with Activate, where I could listen in and be part of their group, and it allowed me to get to know them, the thought process they use. Where Activate's focus, unlike my earlier career in early stage, Activate's focusing on the growth stage. And we define growth stage as, you know, where typically there's product market fit that's been established, and the customers have consumed enough of it that the company is raising capital to go ramp and scale to what is a big market with what they've built, and they're going to continue to enhance it, and they're going to build out their team. So it's a different phase of growth than what my experience had been when I was a venture before. But the principles are the same, which is you're trying to find really compelling teams that are going after really big markets with something that's unique and defensible, that has technology. And the markets where we focus, energy has obviously been one is for a long time. The whole team of founders at Activate, three principals that started it, all had been in the energy markets, had funded companies like Tesla and SolarCity, and you know, a bunch of players that were early and successful. But they've been doing it for long enough that they knew the energy markets. But then their first fund was started in 2017. They were also targeting mobility and industrial tech. So all areas that are ripe for transitions to the new age. And so I started last year with this kind of test how I would work with them. And then just the beginning of this year, we decided to do it full time. So now I'm looking at growth stage companies that are going after those three types of market applications and, you know, trying to apply a lens for what are the characteristics that you'll have in a few years when you've taken the capital.
You'll
be trying to define, like, what am I using the next round of capital to do? Because typically the difference between early stage and growth is, you know, when you talk to growth stage companies, there's always a story about what the company is. So I think the hard part as an investor is you're trying to figure out, is the market going up and to the right in such a consequential way that an earlier stage company has an advantage over the traditional players? And the good news is every entrepreneur has a story of the why now, but that's a lot of what we spend our time trying to figure out through talking to customers, talking to people who know the industry, trying to understand the technology.
Yeah, this is interesting. Actually, I would love to understand more about this because it's more self-serving for me. I'm an early stage entrepreneur. We're starting this company called Transera, developing high efficiency air conditioners. And we're at that just beginning stages that I'd love to hear your thoughts on how a company like ours could be prepared to raise money from later stage investors like you. And like the things you said, like what you look for and the things or the things that have to line up to really make it a match for someone like Activate Capital. But before we do that, let's take another break and play another song. Actually, play the song that you really wanted in the beginning. So let's do it. Let's do it this time again.
Yeah, hopefully listeners like the blues.
Yeah, okay. So tell me about this song.
I went to business school in Chicago, too. So if anyone who's been in Chicago knows that there's a strong blues club mix there. And so that also reminds me of the business school days.
All right, let's hear it.
I don't know. I suggest you buy as many blues albums as you can.
We're back in the studio here with John Gerster. Finally, we got Soul Man And that was great. So you recommend that I watch it with my son. I think that'd be a fun thing to do.
Great movie.
He's old enough now to understand the stuff, and I think could be a fun activity. All right, so back to the conversation about startups. I think what's, as an investor, looking at the companies you invest, you want to see that product market fit. What are the things you look for? Team, longevity of the team, ability.
Yeah, there's a story. Like early stage is so different because it's just less homework you can do, but you still have to fundamentally learn whether you can believe and discover what can be a market that is, in some cases, years away. So at the growth stage where Activate plays, you've got customers. You've got a team. You've got a story as to how they got to where they got to. And then you've got a view of what's going to happen next. And you're trying to make sense of all of that. Just like, you know, in early stage land, which I love being around, it's the same level of conviction and idea that you're trying to apply. It's just there's a lot more data. And so, quite frankly, for me, it's been challenging because what we're forced to do is to do financial projections based on what is already underway with revenue and customers and contribution margin. There's a team that's been assembled. There's a story as to how that team came together. In many cases, their team's going to be growing. So you can assess that where when you're backing a startup, it's, you know, I'm backing Soren. Like, yeah. You know, and basically there's a fundamental bet on a person just as much as the market, where our stage is we're betting on probably more of a team that's been built and a product that's been built and the voice of customer.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of, you have a lot more data to analyze, right? Mm-hmm. Now you know, you see traction or lack of traction, you see progress, you see technical results, you see a lot more stuff. So in some ways, I don't know if it's easier to raise money at the earlier stage because there's so much promise there. So you're raising money or you as an investor, you would invest on a promise. Whereas at your stage, you're investing on the hard data and like some really strong signals there, and you have to detect those signals somehow. Do you find that harder to invest at the later stage than the earlier stage because of that?
I think it's just different. I mean, they're first of all, the industry in venture capital or growth equity is filled with ridiculously smart people. Mm. I'm fortunate enough to be able to learn from, I think, some of the best because style-wise, it's not about smart. It's around how you process and draw conclusions on some of these things that are generally more qualitative than they are quantitative at the end. And you asked, I think, how do you make those calls? I think we're always trying to discover how to believe. And the more a story is built out with a company that exists with product and customers, the more you can kind of sense in your own way, as every individual in an investment team has to do, the pieces that matter, the pieces that you're going to go scrutinize. And the company has got to convince you of that. The team has to convince you of that. One of the other big things you end up trying to figure out is the why now. Because there's plenty of companies that got started early, and I think you and I should be both respectful of the fact that if we've been at this for a long time, there's just a ton more capital available for climate tech investing and for entrepreneurs today than there was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So the good news is there's probably more chances for people to experiment and take risk. But if you look at 10 years ago when things didn't go as well, a lot of times it was around the adoption for something new was just going to take so long that it wasn't going to reward what was a venture-type investment, because it was just going to take a long time for the customer market to adopt. Today, maybe we're benefiting from both. There's more capital, and you can argue there's way more adoption.
Yeah, things have changed in the last 10 years. I think people are really more aware of what's going on. For example, air conditioning, in my world, I don't have to convince people that this is going to be a growing field, that people are going to demand. Just go look outside in a hot summer day in July or August, and you'll know it. People are very, very aware of it. So I think it's in some ways it's gotten easier. It's still hard to raise money. I mean, for Transera, we spent quite a bit of time talking to investors, and, there's always, digging into the details, and there's all the risks and everything that go.
Yeah, how'd it go? How was your impression? Because one of the things I'm sensitive to coming out of early stage is that a lot of venture capital organizations, quite frankly, with the entrepreneurial community, have bad reputations for not being respectful, not being responsive, which I totally get. And I'm doing my best to make sure everything we do at Activate is
to make sure we're managing a process with anyone we're engaging with so that you're respectful of each other's time, and you're trying to design a process that there's gates mm-hmm. so that you know where you are, where I think a lot of entrepreneurs that I've, and we go to the events at Greentown Labs, you and I talk, you hear plenty of people who feel really burned about venture firms during a process, consuming a lot of their time, and maybe never being genuinely interested in a way that they should be. Yeah. So what was your...
My experience was that I think because climate tech is so popular, and like you said earlier, there are a lot of investors getting into the space, a lot of money out there, there are a lot of new venture capital firms, pretty small firms that might have, you know, $50 million for investments, which sounds like a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not. Mm. And they might make one or two investments that year, and they're going to go really careful. They're going to be very careful about that investment. So they... And couple that with the fact that a lot of these being new venture capital firms into this new space for them, I found that a lot of them didn't really have the background to understand the technology and really go through a good diligence process. They're sort of, you know, maybe they read some books or something about and they got on a bandwagon of some technology and they wanted to see that. And so I started pretty quickly to understand the investment firms that were really serious and had the gravitas, the power to really understand this stuff. And you could take a look at them, like how long they invested in that space, you know, how many technical people they had in the team to really understand it, how deeply they dug into the technical details. So I found a lot more success with those firms. The ones that were sort of kind of grand, you know, grand vision, grand ideas, kind of investing in the space because it was popular and, you know, had just started maybe a few years back, or not even a few years. A lot of them started like this year or the year before. I found those, I had like less success with those for whatever reason.
We have a pretty technical product too. And I do think that there are a lot of, like one of the things that happens in today's world of climate tech is a lot of people gravitate towards software because of digital innovation. And, you know, they have a perspective that software can be a real catalyst for changing the environment. But you did hard tech, you know, and so you look at the number of people who can understand that. And at Activate, we're generally investing where the technical risk has been mitigated because the product has been built in its first form or even multiple forms. So you had to have a high bar for people who could technically understand what your differentiation was and what your moat was.
Yeah, exactly. One of the first things I would ask or look at their background is, do they invest in hardware? And that was an easy thing. If they were, and some of them were very upfront, like digital solutions, hard software, fine, that's not for us, and let's move on. But if they had any hardware investments or knowledge about hardware, then at least that was the beginning of the conversation.
Yeah.
And then after that, I had to really make sure that they understood the space, you know, it's better if they understood the refrigeration and air conditioning space. But overall, just the mechanics, the thermodynamics of it, you know, why you need to put so much power to move heat the other way, and, you know, how many different ways you can do that, and what's the most efficient way to do it, and things like that. Eventually, we found an investor that really, really understood that. And you know, they had PhDs from MIT evaluating, doing technical digital diligence on this stuff. So it was refreshing in a way to see that. So I wish more climate tech investors would spend the money to have that, or spend the funds, their funds, to bring really good technical people on board to do.
Listen, you're sophisticated. You were able to pick up on the things you needed to, and there's plenty of folks that are probably less, and it can be a maddening journey because of that, because they have to talk to a lot of people. But I think of when we were funding Digital Lumens, I had a day job running Groom Energy, and I think what I learned there was the market, the broader market, is also a big influencer of whether and how venture firms engage.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was really humbling because we were trying to raise capital for Digital Lumens, the follow-on round. We had gotten the first round from Flybridge here in Boston, and we were trying to raise follow-on capital. And in 2008, 2009, it was not the best time. And I remember going out to Silicon Valley to people I had known from my venture days. And I was suggesting that I would be recruiting a CEO, and we had an early team and we had a product that was in demonstration mode. So it was only today you call it a seed, but, you know, it was the next round of capital. We're going to raise $6 million. We had raised, you know, a couple million bucks so far, and no one would touch it. And I was like, man, it's back to like a pre-home experience of, is it me? Do I have bad breath? Am I not a backable person, even though I thought I had credibility? Or is it the technology? In that point in the world, every venture firm had backed an LED chip company, every firm that could understand hard tech, and this was a system. So I was thinking that was a problem. And then, oh, by the way, you open up the papers and the world was collapsing financially. So the broader conditions can really affect how those conversations go.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think if the wind is your back, it's a lot easier to raise money. And for air conditioning companies, guess when you raise money? In the summer when it's super hot and people walk outside and realize that they want an air conditioner, and that's going to be gross. So in fact, this was kind of the case for us this summer. A few startups in the air conditioning space got funded this summer.
That's
and
true.
I think, a year ago or 2 years ago, it was a lot harder. So, you know, sometimes the market comes around, people come around the idea, it's the right time of the year, you know, a few things happen, all of a sudden it flips and the wind is at your back and things you can raise money. Whereas you couldn't before, despite all the
best efforts.
Well,
there's been like more companies funded in your broad category, in our category, than ever before in the last year or two, because I think people are aware of it.
All right, John, let's take another break and listen to another LP here from our amazing library. This time we chose The Beatles, and it was the first song on this album, the Abbey Road album. All right.
Sun, I say it's all right.
This is WMBR in Cambridge, and you're listening to Entrepreneurs of the World Unite. I'm here in the studio with John Gerster. We just had a great conversation about startup life, starting multiple companies, now investing in some of them, and you know, the road to addressing some of the challenges of climate change. Any parting thoughts, John? What do you think?
Well, I'm psyched you're doing your show, and I think you'll have no shortage of people you can bring to bring interesting ideas based on your Greentown Labs alumni group, based on me going in there and seeing you there with a ton of people who are going through a similar path, although different technologies and different companies. So I'm psyched for who else you bring on.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was just trying to think what this show would be about, but it's mostly sort of my interest in staying connected with the station, and, you know, I love the equipment here, as you can see. But also just talking to people about this stuff, I think, is important. Maybe we can bring some more other entrepreneurs, even from outside the Boston area. And if they're in town, they can come spend an hour here, play whatever their favorite songs. We can talk about this stuff. But ultimately, also sort of educating our listeners. And by the way, if any of you have any comments, you can send a text message. 617-253-8810 is the WMBR station phone number. You can text and we'll get a message here. So if we have a lot of comments about ideas of this show, I'm happy to entertain them. So what's next for you, John? What occupies you right now, today and tomorrow and next week?
Yeah, you know, I have to say I'm in a totally fortunate position that there are too many companies to talk to that are at a growth stage, which I think fundamentally is, it's exciting, it's a little overwhelming, but, you know, we're pretty focused on energy, mobility, and industrial tech, but within those three categories, we're meeting a company or two every day that could fit inside the zone of where we're looking. So we're working on a couple of projects right now, and, you know, we're heading into the holidays, and sometimes that can be, you know, a period where people try to dial it back a bit, but I can tell you that when you start working on some project and you're trying to understand, you think there's something there, you tend, like good music, you don't want to stop listening. You don't want to put it down. So I actually expect I'll be doing a fair amount to the holidays. And the good news is with Zoom, you can do short bursts to get to talk to people and try to figure things out. But I actually think this holiday season we'll be working on a couple of projects.
Really?
So I'm excited about it. Because
so these are active due diligence.
We're in due diligence for a couple of
yeah, companies.
All in sectors that you would find compelling. So it's fortunate that we were able to do that. And like you said, you know, plenty of people can try to discover what they think they want to go learn about. We need to know enough about a company by the time we dig in that we're not just asking basic questions.
Yeah, and I, you know, this has been great. I'd love to stay in touch and see, learn from you and how you guys evaluate these companies. I'm sure you have a ton of methodologies and spreadsheets and whatnot.
Definitely a lot of data.
Yeah, a lot of data. And, you know, as, you know, like I said, self-serving in a way, but I'd love to learn more from you and stay in touch. And yeah.
Fact, well, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
You're welcome. Thanks. This was a lot of fun. All right. So with that, we're going to wrap up this edition, the first edition of Entrepreneurs of the World Unite on WMBR. My name is Sorin Grama, and I will be back in another month with another entrepreneur talking about climate tech. Thank you.
To your life. Hey, everybody, this is Hayes Carl. I'm no gambling man, but if I was, the numbers I'd play would have a couple of eights and a one for sure, as an 88.1 FM WNBR Cambridge.